I read an article that I found pretty shocking. It was written by two very senior Danish scientists from Copenhagen University. They'd both done work with Novo Nordisk on the development of the GLP-1 semaglutide, which is the GLP-1 that you find in Ozempic and Wegovy. What they'd written was an independent editorial, and it was submitted in October 2017 and was published in the Annals of Translational Medicine back in December 2017. Now, December 2017 was the same month that Ozempic was approved in the US. This comment was made after all of the phase 2 trials and 6 of the phase 3 trials for Ozempic had been made public. The article was called "Semaglutide Seems to Be More Effective Than Other GLP-1s." And it said this bombshell statement: "The unusual efficiency of semaglutide, not the least with respect to loss of appetite, has inspired the company," in other words, Novo Nordisk, "to develop semaglutide further for obesity without diabetes. It has been suggested that higher dosages of GLP-1s are needed for the weight loss effects. But the use of higher doses of semaglutide was not supported by the phase 2 studies." That sounds like to me he's saying it's fine for diabetes, but don't up the dose for weight loss because it's not supported by the studies. Now, this opinion came from two Danish scientists who are both leaders in their field. It's not a statement made by two slacker hippies high on weed wearing lab coats. These guys are respected and pretty famous in their fields. And to be honest, I couldn't think of any other reason for them to both say this statement except that it was true. Hi, I'm Bern, and welcome to Investigating Ozempic, Episode 4. If you haven't had a chance, go back and listen to the other 3 previous episodes, because this podcast is like a jigsaw puzzle. There are many pieces, and you kind of need to put those pieces together in order to see the full picture. But I'll just do a quick recap for those who haven't. So in episode 1, we looked at the obesity problem worldwide, and we saw that there is pretty much an obesity epidemic. I think most people would agree on that. We looked at the fact that drug companies have now invented these new weight loss drugs. We've all heard about them in the media. Possibly we know people that are using them. And we also looked at, in that episode, the government regulators, such as the FDA, Australia's Therapeutic Goods, and how it is considered by a lot of medical people that these regulators are in the pocket of the drug companies. And that's because they are funded primarily by drug companies through fees and payments. And I asked the question in that first episode, is this the perfect storm? Then in episode 2, we looked at the goals and passion projects of the two CEOs of Novo Nordisk. The first CEO was there right up till the end of 2016, and then a new guy stepped in. We looked at how the second CEO came in and pushed the button on the Wegovy clinical trials, even though the first CEO was hesitant. He hadn't pushed that button yet. Also in episode 2, we looked at the stock price of Novo Nordisk and how it had risen. Then on episode 3, we looked at some of the first GLP-1s that were used for diabetes type 2 and then eventually used for weight loss. We also took a quick look at the lawsuits that have arisen since those GLP-1s have come out. And in this episode, which is episode 4, we're going to be diving headfirst into the Ozempic clinical trials, because Ozempic came first and then Wegovy came after. So we'll have a good look at the Ozempic trials and we'll have a good look at what the scientists said at the time. So I just want to have a little further look into that statement made by those two Danish scientists and try and work out why they said that they didn't agree with, or they had reservations, or, you know, in my interpretation, is that they hesitated to use increased dosages of semaglutide for weight loss. And as we know, for diabetes, semaglutide, for Ozempic, comes in a lower dose. And for Wegovy, it comes in a significantly higher dose for weight loss. So from what I can see, these guys were saying, we don't agree that the science supports the fact that you use it for a higher dose for Wegovy. So let's look at that. This reminded me of the first CEO of Novo Nordisk and the first CEO who had a passion project for curing diabetes. And he was hesitant to taint a good diabetic drug. It reminded me of that hesitation and of how he had not pushed the button on the Wegovy clinical trials and left before that happened. The new CEO had done that. So if you don't know about that, go back to Diary of a CEO episode and have a listen to that one. The thing that struck me about what those two scientists said was that the phase two studies did not support having a higher dose of semaglutide for weight loss purposes. So the first thing I did was I went to clinicaltrials.gov and I searched for those phase two studies and I put in all the data for the search results and literally nothing. The only phase two study I could find was the dose finding study, but no other studies are listed, which is really frustrating because clearly those scientists have seen something that I cannot get my hands on and that is being kept out of the public eye. And my interpretation of that is, well, they're keeping it out of the public eye because they don't want people to see it because it doesn't go along with what they want people to believe. It's cherry picking. You pick what you want people to see and you hide what you do not want people to see. The first thing to know about these two Danish scientists is that they have both received huge grants from Novo Nordisk towards their research. I'm not saying that this is undeserved in any way at all because both of these guys are brilliant and totally deserve their research being funded. But I just want to, as a matter of clarity, I want you to understand that they have received grants worth hundreds of thousands of dollars towards their science from the Novo Nordisk Foundation. If they are as good as what they look like on paper, it makes total sense that they would have got support for their research. Now is probably the time to tell you about another issue with a Danish scientist, a female Danish scientist. She is the head of the Danish Society for General Medicine, and she had a problem with Wegovy. I'm not going to go totally into what her problem was, but you can read about it because I'm going to put a link to this article. And if you can understand Danish, it'll be a video link as well. We can see her talking. But basically, when she had a problem with Wegovy, she was concerned about two things. She said she was concerned that many of those who deal with obesity in the medical and research world are on the payroll of Novo Nordisk. I will go into that in greater detail because I see that as a huge problem. She said that she was also contacted by Novo Nordisk herself after the deadline. The deadline is a Danish news show. And she said it happened after the deadline editors first approached her and Novo Nordisk with the wish to make a broadcast about Wegovy. She said, the following morning, I received an offer from Novo to join an advisory board. I would get money for that, a pretty decent amount. So that sounds pretty sus to me and not a great thing for Novo Nordisk to do. I mean, you can't buy everybody, can you? In order to make a drug, it takes years of research and years of clinical trials. And that is no guarantee that the drug will even be successful. Only a small percentage of drugs pass all three levels of clinical trials. And once they're past those stage three trials, it can apply to the government regulator, such as the FDA, for a new drug application, or an NDA for short. Now, the cost to get to this point is estimated to be somewhere between $2.8 billion and $5 billion US dollars to get a drug to market. So it is really, really costly. Obviously, with the millions of sales worldwide of Ozempic and Wegovy, Novo Nordisk will make that money back and much more. The three stages of clinical trials, which I just want to run through quickly again, is phase one, where the researchers may test only a small number of people. This is the foundational phase. Then phase two. Phase two is where the researchers test the effectiveness of an experimental drug on a particular disease or condition on a slightly larger group. Then phase three. Phase three is where most of the money is spent. Is where the researchers test large numbers, several hundreds to thousands. This stage uses only randomized participants and is designed to compare the new treatment to an existing treatment. The ultimate purpose of phase three clinical trials is to establish and confirm the safety and efficacy of the new treatment. Drug companies have a bad reputation for manipulating clinical trials. Researchers have found that pharmaceutical company sponsored studies were four times more likely to return results favorable to the sponsor than were studies with other sponsors. All of the trials that were used for evaluation of semaglutide by the various government medical bodies, such as the FDA and the ATG, were conducted by Novo Nordisk, who are the major sponsor. General tricks are using participants of a certain gender. Weight, age, or race can affect results. We saw this in the liraglutide trials from the last episode. We saw that there were more females used in the weight loss trials and more males in the diabetic trials. That gender disparity is also true for the Ozempic and Wegovy trials. There were more women in the Wegovy trials and more men in the Ozempic trials. Plus, we saw the disparity in the weight of the trial participants for diabetes and weight loss, with the weight loss trial participants being around 20 kilos heavier than the diabetes trial participants. This is also, again, true for the Wegovy trials of semaglutide. Now, all of these tricks feel to me like you've kind of got your hand on the scale already before trying to measure anything, if you know what I mean. It already kind of feels rigged towards the most favourable result. That's probably why they say that a sponsored trial is four times more likely to return results favourable. And if you've designed it and you can put in what you want, then yeah, you're going to be trying to get the most favourable result for yourself. Now, the time period of a trial may affect the end result, and possibly when drug companies don't get the results they want, they delay publication of a trial or simply don't publish. When I did a search on clinicaltrials.gov and put in the words semaglutide and Novo Nordisk for the last 20 years, it came up with 248 studies. Of the 248, 191 had no results posted. That's 77% without their results posted. Effectively making these results hidden. Now, there's a relatively new body and an excellent TED talk, which I'll put a link to, that discusses this very issue. There's a link in the show notes. So that's a problem. If you don't publish your results, doctors can't find them, people can't see them, we can't see whether it was a successful trial or not, or are you just cherry-picking your trials to work out which ones are the best for you? You know, it's really hard to get a clear picture. The dosage used may affect a trial, and how that dosage is administered. We'll be coming back to this later as this is very important. So make no mistake, the design of a trial is thought out very carefully before a drug company spends millions conducting it. Novo Nordisk have done quite a few expensive clinical trials on semaglutides. Because they own the patent, they are mostly the only ones conducting all of the trials, which is problematic because they want those trials to be good. They want the next blockbuster drug. Even when I found other comments or reviews on these trials, the scientists were often subsidized by or had received payments from Novo Nordisk at one time. Novo Nordisk is a business first. They have a board of directors and stockholders. We talked about this in episode 2. They want the next blockbuster drug. A blockbuster drug is one that earns $1 billion or more per year. Novo Nordisk trademarked the names of the clinical trials for Ozempic. They called them the SUSTAIN clinical trials. This stood for the Semaglutide Unabated Sustainability in Treatment of Type 2 Diabetes. These trials tested diabetes type 2 participants mostly. They tested them in dosages of mostly 0.5 milligrams and 1 milligram. I'm going to look at the first 6 SUSTAIN trials. Now remember, these are the diabetes trials. And they started around 2013 and were sort of all done and dusted by 2015, 2016, which was when the old CEO was in charge, the one that had the passion project for finding a cure for diabetes. They tested mostly men in these trials. The average weight of the participants were about 90 kilos. And in the SUSTAIN 1 clinical trial, the weight loss on a 0.5 dose was 3.68 kilos. And on a 1 milligram dose, it was 4.67 kilos. This was over 30 weeks. In the SUSTAIN 2 trial, they tested a 0.5 dose. And that group lost 4.28 kilos. And that was over 56 weeks. And on the 1 milligram dose, they lost 6.13 kilos over 56 weeks. There were approximately 40% adverse events, approximately. And most of those adverse events were gastric in nature. These were considerably lower dosages than what you find in Wegovy. So 0.5 and 1 milligram were tested in the Ozempic clinical trials. And they tested hundreds of people. But there were a lot of adverse events. If I was looking at these trials and I was looking at the amount of weight loss and looking at the amount of adverse events, I would think, there is not a whole heap of weight loss lost, and there are a considerable number of adverse events. In the SUSTAIN 4 clinical trial, there were 574 adverse events from less than 400 people on the 1 milligram dosage. So quite a few adverse events. I'm going to put a link to these trials so you can go and have a little look around at them yourself. The specific wording that those scientists used was, it wasn't supported in the phase 2 studies. So I got back on clinicaltrials.gov and I did a search for phase 2 and semaglutide. And the only trial that came up was the Ozempic dosage trial, which we talked about previously. And then I went back further to phase 1 studies and searched for the same data 43 studies came up, all with no results. So I know those scientists are talking about the results from the phase two studies, but they're not posted. They're not put up anywhere. I can't see them. Those scientists are clearly looking at something that I can't get my hands on. So I am gathering that the results that they have seen are not conducive to using higher dosages for weight loss. It's frustrating when you can't see results. It's considered good clinical practice for pharmacy companies or drug companies to post their clinical trials on clinicaltrials.gov or other websites. They need to post them somewhere. And clinicaltrials.gov is the most popular site. And Novo Nordisk has posted there frequently and often before. So I don't understand why they would, I do understand why they would not put their phase two clinical trials up. I believe that if you're not posting results or if you're hiding results, it's because you don't want the general public to see it. Now, just going back again to that article that those two scientists wrote, they suggested an alternative approach to using semaglutide for obesity. They suggested that, and I'm just going to quote here again, because it was felt that the limiting side effects were mostly caused by plasma concentration peaks reached early after the weekly injections, it was decided to investigate lower but daily doses. And they thought that this would possibly completely eliminate the troughs and peaks and it could help with the side effects. So this is a really interesting recommendation because anyone that's taking Wegovy or that is looking at Wegovy would know we don't inject it daily. It's a weekly injection. So what on earth happened with these scientists and what happened with this suggestion? We're going to look at that more next week. But right now we're going to have a chat to Kevin and have a listen to his journey with another weight loss drug, Mounjaro. All right, so we're recording. So, Kevin, do you want to tell me why you decided to take weight loss drugs and which ones you're taking?
Sure. So I started my weight loss journey when I was about 14. So it's been a lifelong thing for me. My family loves processed food. You can hear from my accent, I'm originally from the US. And when I was growing up, my mother was on Weight Watchers and she was on this crazy plan where you add up the amount of grams of fat and you subtract the grams of fiber. And as long as the resulting number is 30, you're good to go. Yeah, it didn't work particularly well. And so I kind of grew up with a warped understanding of what nutrition was, which was weird because my dad is actually a doctor. But anyway, so...
Is he a GP or a general practitioner? Or?
Emergency room. So he's more interested if you have a hole in your head than if you're eating well, I think is the general vibe. But anyway, so I was from a fairly young age, I was larger and my whole family is larger. So to me, it feels like there is some sort of either environmental or genetic predisposition that makes us all hungry a lot. Basically, when I was in uni, I was really struggling to wake up for classes. And I actually bought an alarm clock that was made for deaf people that would shake the bed and flash lights at me, and I would still sleep through it.
Oh my God.
And it turns out what was happening was I had sleep apnea. And this was when I was 21. Mm. And at the time, I would have weighed around 120 kilos, I would guess. But even just sitting up, I tend to snore just when I'm like breathing just during the day. So to me, I think that's actually caused by a small airway. But long story short, I've kind of dealt with a lot of these issues throughout my life. I do use a CPAP each night. I'm quite happy with it. I have done since I was in my 20s. You know, this is yep. nothing new to me. But so when Ozempic started hitting the press, one of the things that I had thought was, is this the tool that will give me an actual edge to achieve a healthier weight? And I have obviously tried many types of diets throughout my life. I have worked really hard on being active. I commute by bike to work every day. I average 63 Ks a week on my bike. You know, I exercise a lot. I'm about to do Sydney to the Gong tomorrow, which will be a 93K mm-hmm. bike ride. Wow. I'm not afraid to exercise, but no matter how much I exercised, I could not get my weight to come down. And it's because I just eat so much food. And it's not even particularly bad food. You know, for a long time, I switched to whole foods. I would do all these things. I tried intermittent fasting. I'm not eating breakfast because I'm like, well, I'm not hungry anyway. It's just more calories I don't need. Right. And so basically, it was a struggle for me to maintain 135 kgs, given how much I wanted to eat naturally. So that was where I kind of found myself for the last decade. And when these drugs started hitting the press, I went, maybe this is a tool that can tip the scales in my favor, pun intended.
Right. So I
did a lot of research online. I'm a fairly data-oriented, science-oriented person, so I looked up all the clinical trials and I read as much as I could read. And I realized that these things have been around for a very long time, actually. The first GLP-1 medication was approved more than a decade ago for use in diabetics. Right. You know, we've been using these things for a while. And so was worried about going to a GP and being told no, just because, you know, it is a pretty touchy subject for me. Finally decided, you know, I can just take the initiative. And I found a weight loss clinic that was more than happy to help me out. And in that conversation with my nurse practitioner, she was asking me if I had any preference around medication. And I said, well, according to the studies, it seems that Mounjaro is the most effective. I might as well just go for the one that achieves the best results. That was what I elected for.
Was price a factor at all? Because
Mounjaro is... Yeah, for me, no. And that's just as a result of my own privilege, frankly. I'm in a position where the cost difference didn't actually matter that much to me. But what has been surprising, actually, is it's actually saving me money. I track my budget very religiously, and because I have managed just through sheer luck to be on the lowest possible dose of Mounjaro this entire time, and for it to still be effective for me, the decrease in the amount of food I order at takeout has offsetted the cost of the medication and then some.
How much is that medication in Australia? If you can just remind me, what is it for?
I looked this up just because I figured you might ask me. So I refilled yesterday, and I paid $351 and some cents for four vials, which is 1 month's supply or 4 weeks' worth.
Does Mounjaro come in an injectable pen?
It does. They're switching over to pens now, but the vials are still around. The pens are a little bit more expensive, but the vials are still, they've discontinued them, but a couple of chemists can still get them. So long as I can, I will, because I'm perfectly comfortable with the vial and it's cheaper. So why not? But
And you can alter your dose with the vial rather than the pen, which is sometimes fixed.
You can actually alter your dose with the pen that's here as well. So in the US, the pens are a single shot. You push the button and it does the thing. Here, they're using the UK pen, which has also gone to Hong Kong now. Even when I switch to pens, I'll still be able to alter that if I want to.
Okay. Can you tell me, Kevin, so you had your first dose. How long after the first dose did you notice any kind of a change?
For me, it took about 10 minutes. Not even kidding. God. So I knew that I was trying to lose weight. I know what to do. You know, I've been to dietitians. Like, I knew the things. So I was like, while I'm waiting for all the medication to sort itself out and get here, I might as well just start on doing what I know I need to do. So I, for about a week, had been basically fighting that food hunger, trying to cut down my calories. And so at this point, I am starving. Like, I'm waiting for dinner. It's a Wednesday night. And my stomach is growling. And I'm like, I want to eat. Where's dinner? And the meds had gotten here that day. So I was like, you know what? Like, nighttime's a good time to inject. Wednesday's a good day for me. Why don't I just do it tonight? So I went and I injected, and then I came and sat back down on the couch. And over the next 10 minutes, if my hunger was a 10 out of 10 before, it kind of decreased. It was an 8, then it was a 5, then it was a 3. And then by the time dinner was actually ready, it was like a 1.
Wow.
And it was the weirdest sensation, because never in my life been able to make intellectual decisions about food. It's always driven by that reptile brain. I need to have it. I'm starving. It was just like putting earplugs in. You know, I had this screaming high-pitched squeal that I just couldn't stand. And then it's just like, oh, earplugs. And I can still hear the squeal. I know it's there. I know I should eat, but like, eh. and so I was like, okay, cool. So I went and I had a normal dinner, you know, normal size portion for me. And that's what I've been continuing to do. So it took about 10 minutes. Yeah.
That's amazing. Pretty much most of the people that I've spoken to say that it does happen very quickly, like very quickly. They get the food noises get turned on mute. That's quite a common thing. What is the dosage amount? So you started off with the dosage amount on Mounjaro. How many milligrams is that?
So the smallest commercially available dose of Mounjaro is 2.5 milligrams. And it goes up in 2.5 milligram increments up to 15.
So what did your doctor or nurse practitioner tell you to do? Did she say, do that for 4 weeks and then increase your dose? Or what were her instructions?
Her instructions were, let's put you on the starting dose and let's see how you go. So I've obviously been having conversations with her this whole time. I'm now 18 weeks in on the 2.5 milligram dose. And I talked to her a couple days ago, and she was saying, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The less medication you need in your body, the better. If it's working for you, why would you increase? The official guidance from the manufacturer is that you should only sit at the 5, 10, or 15 milligram doses for long-term use. The general advice from at least my team has been, if it's working at a lower dose, stay there for as long as that's the case.
What about the side effects? Did you have any side effects?
None. One of my recurring jokey comments online in the support groups is, if you're like me, the only side effect that you will experience is anxiety over side effects, which you then will not experience.
That's funny. Oh, wow. That's amazing. So how has your weight loss journey been going over the 18 weeks? What sort of progress have you been making?
So I started at 135 kilos. I'm now 117.8. So that's a loss of 17.2 kilos. And that's an average weekly loss of 0.91 kilos.
That's a phenomenal result, really, isn't it? How do you feel about that?
It's weird. It doesn't feel real because every other time I've done this, it's been a constant white knuckle struggle. You know, you get 2 weeks in and it's just, you're fighting all the time and your brain is just constantly going eat. And this time that's not happening. My coworkers, the first week I was on the medication, my coworkers was like, have something changed with you? And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, normally at lunchtime, it'll be like 11:55 and you're like begging us all to go to lunch. And today I had to remind you that it was lunchtime. And like, you seem a lot happier and just a lot less stressed, but I can't tell what about because work hasn't changed. So like, has something changed for you? And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, something's changed. I'll tell you about it because there's no point in trying to pretend these things aren't happening. But it was just amazing to me that like, even my coworkers who know me very well, but like, you know, they're not involved in my health situation or my food industry, right? So.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you've had this amazing weight loss journey that you're going on. Do you have a goal in mind of where you're thinking you want to end up?
Yeah, so I've actually just surpassed my original goal weight. And the way I derived my original goal weight was I looked at the clinical trials and I saw what percentage of body mass they lost. And I said, okay, well, I should be able to achieve what was achieved on average in the clinical trials.
So you looked at the Mounjaro clinical trials, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed the weight of the individuals and the different proportion of male to female.
Yeah, you can look through the demographics of who's involved in each one of these studies. What they tend to find is women lose more weight than men. I don't know why that necessarily is, but that is a finding that they found. And so I mm-hmm. went, well, if I need to make myself a goal that feels reasonable, right? Because I also didn't want to go into this with the expectation that I was suddenly going to be Brad Pitt tomorrow. So I was like, let's make a goal that is a reasonable goal that should be achievable. Yeah. It has blown my mind to hit it this quickly. But here I am. So
are you planning on staying on the drug, or what are your plans?
I plan to listen to my care team with what they tell me to do with this. Maintenance is something that we're still figuring out with these medications. There are some pretty divergent camps that are around. There's one group that says the people that have a really strong effect with these medications, like me, they're responding this way because they have some kind of metabolic dysfunction. And you can change your habits, you can change your diet all you want, but that metabolic dysfunction is going to stay there. And as soon as you go off the meds, you're going to regain. And the logic for this is similar to what would happen on, say, blood pressure medication, right? Like if you get prescribed a blood pressure tablet and you change your lifestyle, there are a small percentage of people that are going to be able to change what they eat, change their activity levels, get their blood pressure under control, and come off the meds. But most people will just end up on the med for the rest of their life. So that's one very strong camp. The other camp is, this is a tool that you use for a short period of time where you retrain yourself, you learn what you should be eating and how much, and then you can come off the medication and maintain. My personal preference, if you ask me, is to actually stay on the medication for as long as it is helpful and working for me, because I do not like the person that I was, and I do not like how much of my brain was just chewed up thinking about, can I eat? Like, it was truly insane. Like, I didn't even realize how much it was happening until it stopped happening, and then I was like, wait.
It was a relief, or
well, it's just like, wait, is this what normal people feel like? You know, the conversations I've had with doctors. I had one doctor that he was obviously trying to scare me into losing weight, and I'm like, okay, look, it's fine. I get it. I'm big. I'm supposed to lose weight. It's healthy. Fine. Just tell me that. But he needed to find a number to scare me with, and so I did a blood test, and I sat there with him as he went, now your folates will show how many vegetables you're eating, and they're great. And your blood pressure, this is going to show us how much salt you're eating, and that's normal. And I was just like, dude, it's fine. Just tell me I'm fat. It's cool. I can cope. And so those conversations make a lot more sense now, because if this is what most people experience with food, then of course it's easy to just make different choices. I've proven how easy it is in my own life. As soon as I remove the food noise, it's easy for me to eat high protein, low carb, low calorie, and just go with it, right? So it was really a revelation. Yeah.
A lot of people say that the food noises are a lot. And so there seems to be a couple of different things that people say. And one of them is what fills the food noise, because they possibly can slide into some mental health issues because, you know, once the food noise is gone, well, there's a void. So there's silence. Yep. It's like, what's going to fill that silence, if you know what I mean? So, some people are like, oh, you know, I got more anxiety. Yeah. But, you know, the vast majority of people I've spoken to said it's a relief. But I'm just, you know, thinking out loud here, Kevin. Have you thought about when you're happy with where you are, have you thought about, rather than taking it weekly, stretching it out to like fortnightly and then seeing if that makes a difference? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I guess personal preference would be to decrease the dosage rather than stretching it out. But I do notice that on, say, day 6 or day 7 after injection, the food noise starts creeping in slightly, but it'll be like, if it was like a 1 to 2 out of 10, the second day after my injection, then it'll become like a 2 to 3 out of 10. So perfectly manageable, perfectly, like I could just resist it. It's fine. But I know that if I kept going, that would start increasing again. And there will be a tipping point. I just know myself too well. There will be a tipping point. Yeah. I will go, ugh, and I will just give in. And that tipping point is usually when I'm, you know, rolling around in bed with growling stomach at about 10 p.m. at night, not being able to sleep, going, please just let me sleep. I really just want to be well rested for my work day tomorrow, please. So then go eat.
And the reason that you chose Mounjaro over Wegovy, I know that Mounjaro publicized that they lose a higher percentage of body weight compared to Ozempic. Was that the reason that you chose Mounjaro? Yeah,
and I guess different studies find different things, but also the side effect profile seemed to be decreased on Mounjaro for most people. If you did get side effects, they were worse, which is interesting. But basically the working theory that people are kind of trying to prove or disprove right now is because Mounjaro acts on two receptors and semaglutide only works on one, it's kind of more natural for your body to have these things go hand in hand. There's actually clinical trials happening for another drug, which should be out in a year or two, called retatrutide, which is three receptors. So I think these things will continue to get better and better. But honestly, if that came out tomorrow, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. So I'm just going to hang out. I'm good. This is working just fine for me. So,
yeah, that's great. That's a great story, isn't it? That's a really successful story for you. So for anyone who was looking at these weight loss drugs, you would be a big thumbs up. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say anyone. I would say if the reason that you want these is for your health and not for cosmetic reasons, and because you have struggled with food noise, then yes. I mean, one of the things that I see a lot in the support groups is, and even in the clinical trials, they find that there's a solid chunk of people that these things just don't work for. I don't know exactly why that would be, but I do know that obesity is a very complex condition to treat. There's genetic predisposition, there's appetite, there's environment, there's what your friends do, there's all of these things all coming together. And so if the reason that you have gained weight is because you're hungry all the time, I tell my friends that for me, this has been basically like taking Panadol for hunger. And why wouldn't you do that?
I think that's about it. So you've told me about your journey, why you've gone on it. How tall are you? I haven't asked how tall you are.
I'm 180 centimeters or 6 foot.
Oh, tall. Thanks, Kevin. That's great. Thanks, Kevin, for that interview. That was a fantastic look at his weight loss journey. And just an update on him is he is now on week 22 of the lowest dose, 2.5 milligram dose of Mounjaro, and he weighed in at 116.3 kilograms, so another couple of kilos lost. So go, Kevin. Yay. Next week on the podcast, we discuss further the suggestion that those scientists gave, which is to inject semaglutide daily for weight loss. We look at what happened with that suggestion. What was done about that suggestion? Did the pharmacy companies take that suggestion seriously? Or did they realise that a once-a-week injection is far more appealing to the general public? And what did they do about that? And what did the government regulators say about that? Plus, we also take a look at some of the more serious side effects that you can get with GLP-1s on higher dosages. All this and more next week on Investigating Ozempic. Don't forget to follow and rate and review, which would be wonderful. It all helps me. And Investigating Ozempic is written and produced by myself, Bernadette Fisher, and please see all of the medical disclaimers in the show notes, and all the links are sitting there as well for you. See you next week.